The following is a presentation of the Premier Dance Network.
I'm James, and this is The Stage Right Side with James Whiteside, where we'll dive deep into the dark world of dance and come up on the bright side. Oh, that's terrible. This is The Stage Right Side with James Whiteside. It is week eight at the Metropolitan Opera House, the last week. I can't believe this season is over. It's insane. And I have a really phenomenal guest who I respect and admire so much. It is the one, the only, Julie Kent.
Hello! I'm so happy to be here.
On the Stage Right Side.
On the bright side with James Whiteside.
On the bright side with James Whiteside, on the stage right side. Anything else that rhymes?
We could ask my daughter.
Yeah, anything. Josephine, her daughter, is here as well. She's taking some photos, looking adorable, naturally. It's actually an intermission right now between Act 1 and 2 of Sleeping Beauty. We are so theatrical on the stage right side. So I just want to talk a little bit about the season real quick, and just how much this season particularly has meant to me. I've been dealing with my mom has been really sick, and she actually passed away this week during Sleeping Beauty. So it's been really, really just a lot emotionally on stage and off. And it's, I don't know, been a really beautiful time with my friends and my family. And I'm just really grateful to have, an art form that I can really use my feelings in, I guess. So that aside, I just wanted to thank everybody for listening to the podcast and coming to the performances and being incredibly supportive and just generally beautiful. So thank you. So that aside, Julie, I would like to just ask you a couple of questions about this incredibly fresh time in your career. And I'd also like to go back a little bit and talk about, you know, things that I would like to know about your career. So, just do the obligatory where you're from and all that jazz.
I am from Maryland. I was raised in the Bethesda, Potomac, Rockville area. And then I came to New York City when I was 16 to join ABT as an apprentice. So that was 30 years ago in October.
And how did you get a job? Did you have to audition or did they find you?
I did a giant audition. There were already several dancers in ABT from my school, so...
Who were they?
They were Susan Jaffe, Cheryl Yeager, Peter Fonseca. And so Bershnikov was aware of who I was through word of mouth mm-hmm. and however those things work.
Well, now it's different.
Yes. So I did this great big audition and was offered an apprentice contract, knowing that I was still very young and my parents really weren't interested in me leaving home mm-hmm. too soon. So I was able to finish my junior year of high school at home and still be an apprentice with the company and dance with them quite often during the year. But I didn't have to officially move until I was 17.
Wow. And so... was it Misha that offered you the contract?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So how long was he director when you joined?
He was the director for the first 5 years of my professional life. And then when he left the company, Jane Herman, who had come on board as an executive director in Misha's last year, and then she sort of stayed on and led the company for a couple of years on her own, before they found Kevin McKenzie, mm-hmm. Who had left the company about a year and a half before, almost 2 years before, and to go to Washington Ballet and develop skills in running a company. Mm-hmm. So that's how. And then Kevin was my director from 1992 until now.
Wow, wow. So can you just tell me about how working with Misha differed from working with Kevin?
Yes, I mean, I think it's extremely different, and I think they both are true to their roots in a wonderful way. Mikhail Baryshnikov is a dancer of Soviet Russia and was a ballet superstar and came to this country and pursued elevating the artistic level, the excellence, the artist pursuit, and really trying to just raise the standard across the board at ABT. And yes, I mean,
it
certainly made a huge impact on the dancers that he worked with. Yeah. Even seeing somebody so famous and so obviously in a league of his own or with very few company, he was a servant to his art always. He never would do anything that he didn't feel like had artistic integrity. Mm-hmm. And each day you could see him pursue and perfect and explore and try to just find the ultimate sophistication in every single movement and gesture. And to see that in somebody who we all respected and admire so much made a huge impact. He never did anything for the sake of that. You know, he never took advantage of the fact that people loved him so much or his natural charisma mm-hmm. or anything. He was always just completely, his integrity, his artistic integrity was just extremely impactful for all of us that were with him.
And so as your transition now as director of Washington Ballet, like, what would you say the number one thing you want to take from either Kevin or Baryshnikov to your directorship? What do you feel like is the most important for you?
Well, I think what I learned from both of them is where we started. You have to be true to who you are and where you came from.
Yeah.
And what Kevin brought to the company was everything that is so honest about him. He's a very kind person. He's a very thoughtful person. He's very nurturing. He also has very high standards. But he comes, his background is the youngest of 11 children from Vermont. You know, he's not from Soviet Russia.
Yeah.
So he's in a way, he is true to exactly who he is and the wealth of experience that he knows and what he's learned from leading this company for so many years. And he trusts his own knowledge about how to develop dancers because he's done it for 25 years.
Yeah.
So I think what I've learned from both of them is that I have to be true to exactly who I am, what I've learned, and where I've come from, what I know, and then my responsibility is to share it with everybody that's in front of me and help them develop provide the same kind of environment that I feel like I've been so lucky to have here at ABT, where everybody that's been within the institution has really helped me to try to fulfill my potential and encouraged me and supported me and pushed me and nurtured me mm-hmm. Provided me with that environment where I could really not even just fulfill it, but really surpass the potential that I felt like I ever had.
Mm-hmm.
So that's from what I've learned from Baryshnikov, from Kevin, from Victor, from Georgina, from everybody that I've worked with in this institution, whether it was for a short period of time or for years and years and years. I feel like it's the beautiful legacy that we have in classical dance, especially where you just hand down from generation to generation the investment that was put in you.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. So So back to your, you know, origin story a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So you were really young when you joined the company.
Yes.
And what do you remember what your first solo or principal role was?
Yes. My first solo was the Fairy of Generosity and Jewels in Sleeping Beauty, which is why watching the company dance this ballet the last few days that I'm officially a part of this company has been really, really moving for me. Yeah. To see 30 years later all these beautiful young men and women starting their careers and doing so beautifully. And it just brought me right back to, you know, when I was, it was 1986, yes, and Kenneth McMillan was creating his new Sleeping Beauty for ABT that premiered in 1987. And I started as the nurse holding the baby, and my hands were dripping with sweat. I was so nervous. I mean, all I had to do was stand there holding the baby, walk downstage, show the baby, walk back upstage. But I was so, you know, just trying to, and the advice I give to young dancers, trying to make something out of nothing. I mean, all the other parts, everybody else has done them and done them beautifully. Where the real interest is when you're given a role that really doesn't have anything and you turn it into something. And that's what catches people's attention. And so by June of that year, I was doing a solo in Sleeping Beauty. My first principal role, I believe, was Caroline in Jardin aux Lilas, followed by the ballerina in Balanchine's Ballet Imperial, mm-hmm. which was, I was really cast against type because it's an extremely difficult virtuoso role. But I was pushed and supported by David Richardson and Patricia Neary, who said it at mm-hmm. the time.
Enough.
Yeah, pretty much everybody in the business has worked with her and learned a lot. She's mm-hmm. a tough cookie, but that was exactly what I needed to not... at a young age decide you're this kind of dancer, yeah. that kind of dancer, but you're the kind of dancer you want to be, and you just have to want to do something that's not so comfortable. Mm-hmm. And again, that beautiful, what I learned and which I feel like I try to apply as a teacher is just being that person that inspires you to work harder than you ever thought you could work or wanted to work, and to believe that you have something in yourself that you don't even believe, but you see that somebody else does, and it just inspires you and makes you want it because there's somebody that wants it even more for you.
Yeah.
And sort of pushes you to that next level. And that was a formative experience where I thought, you know, I'm stronger than I look, and I'm stronger than I think I am. So that's good.
Was there ever do you feel like you ever missed out on a ballet? Like, is there something that you really wish you had performed?
There are quite a few, but I've come to terms with that because, first of all, I don't think, I mean, who gets to dance as long as I have?
And
I've done so many. I mean, there is such a thing called greed, and I try not to go there. And then also, you know, you enjoy ballets in a different way when you've never danced them than when you have. And I'm so happy that there are so many beautiful ballets that I can just enjoy visually as opposed to living every step with them. And you can just enjoy that, knowing that they're there. And so much of the Balanchine rep, quite a few McMillan and Ashton roles that were across the pond in Europe that never sort of made it over here. But I certainly can't complain on that front as far as not having enough to do.
I so vividly remember, I mean, I joined in 2012, and I mean, you have always been so generous and kind and wonderful with me, but there's like in my mind, I have such a vivid memory of watching A Month in the Country. And this is a ballet that just wouldn't be done in Boston Ballet. And just for those of you who don't know, I was in Boston Ballet before I joined American Ballet Theatre. I was there for 10 years. There you have it. And it's just something that doesn't really fit into the rep there. Maybe it could, but it's just not there. And so it was a really new experience for me. And I watched it and I said, I think that's my favorite ballet I've ever seen. And I was watching you, and I was watching just an incredible cast of people who inspired me. Like I thought I was going to explode. And it was a really just, it was a revelation in the way I look at ballet. And ABT has really sort of prompted that in me. And I don't want to say that I'm a changed dancer, but I like new things.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I think that that's what we're all looking for in art, especially knowing that art takes shape and form of in so many ways. But that new experience where you see something and you feel something and you feel like, I didn't know that existed. And it just, you feel, it's such a gift.
You're full.
Yes. You're like, wow. And you know, as you get older, it doesn't happen as often. Yeah. So when it does happen, boy, you cherish it. And you're just so grateful. And yeah, I mean, that was such a gift that Kevin gave to me to bring that ballet into the rep. I mean, certainly it wasn't just for me, but that I got to dance it was definitely a gift. And things that really open your eyes to something that you didn't know or never thought of in a certain way. I mean, boy, that's what we're, I guess, it's that reassurance that we're all looking for in life.
Yeah, amen to that. Also, there's a certain, I don't know, for me, art is very meaningful when it forces emotions into me that are usually just chilling.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
I don't feel things 100% all the time, because that's insane, and I would never be able to leave my house, you know?
Exactly.
But there are those moments when art speaks to you in a way. It could be music, it could be a painting, it could be a ballet, you know? And you have these forced emotions that fill you up in a way that you don't get from just living, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So it's really special, and that ballet especially really just hit me. So that aside...
Me too.
I mean, really, it's like brilliant.
I would definitely get the shoes out of the closet for that.
For that one, I think it'd be worth it. Dust them off.
Yep.
So, can you tell me a little bit about your transition to Washington? Why and how did this happen?
Well, I can tell you a lot about that. It totally came out of the blue. Last year, and I basically said thank you, but no thank you. I'm really not looking to disrupt my entire life. My family and I are so happy in New York City. I had just transitioned into a new position at ABT, which I was thrilled about. And fast forward over a period of 4 to 5 months, I came to the determination that
can we have all Act 2 Awakening Supers to the stage, please? Act 2 Awakening Supers to the stage, please.
Live theater kids, ladies and gentlemen.
I came to the determination that I didn't want to be the person that gave up an awesome opportunity because I was afraid of change. And I wanted to be the person that gave that example to my children, that at 46 years of age, after living in the same apartment for 20 years, living in New York City for 30 years, living with being in the same company for 30 years, being so comfortable and happy, I wanted to show them that you, first of all, you take happy with you wherever you go, and that you should embrace change and opportunity with the spirit of adventure and confidence and I wanted that for them. I wanted to take the advice that I would have given them if they had come to me as adults and saying, you know, I'm happy where I am, I'm thrilled, but what do you think? This is a great opportunity. And I would have said, of course, you know, I want you to go for it. Mm-hmm. I want you to spread your wings and fly. Mm-hmm. So that was the emotional part of the decision, which, you know, with me is first. And then the professional part, I really had to weigh in that decision, am I willing to let go of this wonderful professional opportunity? And compounded was that it wasn't just any city in the country. It was my home city. I mean, my mother's there, my sister's there. The first stage I ever performed on was the Kennedy Center stage, where the company performs in the majority. I knew of the company my whole life, the school, the company, Miss Day, the founder. And there was so much about it that just made sense and motivated me in a way that an opportunity in another city where I had no history or background would just enticed me even more. And So I just found a way to marry all of it together and say, and of course with support and conversation of my husband and my children, we all just thought, you know, let's just go do this. It's going to be an exciting adventure, mm-hmm. and you know we'll be just fine because we're all going to be together and we'll be well supported. And you know, when I was coming to terms with my farewell as a performer, I made this list of post-performing career goals. It sounds very fancy, but it was really just a way to try to focus my thoughts because you have so many running through you. And so people have always said to me, you know, make lists and just write it down. And it really did help because it just gave me something in those moments where I was feeling a million things. Just concentrate on five. And it was at the top of the list was to share my voice as an American artist, a woman, a mother, a ballerina, and to nurture and develop the next generation of dancers, to be an advocate for arts education, and to be a voice that reassures dancers like yourself and a lot of developing dancers when there's so much pressure on you now to be a star and to be famous and to be that I feel like wasn't a part of my development, that it's part of the world and embrace it and go with it, but you can also just focus on your work and know that that's enough too. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to be the peanut butter on everyone's bread, you know, just be true to yourself, work really hard, and at the end of the day, your work speaks for yourself. And I feel like being an artistic director of a company, you have the largest platform to check all those boxes. And just as far as being a leader, I mean, I had always felt like the leader was the person that wanted to be in charge, the person in a ballet company that knows everyone's steps or tells you, you need to do that and you need to do that. And that's never been me. That's never been my personality. I never really wanted to be in charge. I knew my own steps, but I certainly didn't know yours. And what I have come to realize is that that's really micromanagement skills and leadership skills are really, I think, people that inspire other people to do what they do even better and to inspire in them the knowledge that what they're doing is worthwhile and that their efforts are noble and, yes, take it to that next level. I'm going to support you all the way and I'm going to give you everything that I know about how you can do it, but you're going to do it. And in that way, you support everybody around you to do what they do really well. And so that's sort of why, and I feel like as far as developing women leaders, again, going back to being emotionally driven, if you can find that emotional context inside a woman and speak to that voice, I think there's no stopping her. If you tell me, Julie, do you want to be like in charge of a whole bunch of people and tell them all, say absolutely not. But if you present it and you find a way to realize that what you're doing is actually going to allow everybody around you by supporting them to fulfill and develop themselves, and that's a much more satisfying and interesting, and it's a much big motivator for me to want to accept that responsibility.
That is absolutely phenomenal, and I know that everybody at ABT respects and adores you and will miss you like insanely.
Right. You know I'm gonna miss you guys more than words can say, but you know that's the beauty of things like this. I can just text you.
Yep.
And
the future.
Yeah, I mean.
So I want to say a huge thank you to Julie Kent, president of the world, in my opinion, for coming on the stage right side with little old me.
Oh,
and if you would like, can you just prattle off your social media, like your Instagram, if you'd like?
That's exciting.
Come on in. Sorry, we have a guest. It's Rena. She's been on the stage right side before.
She's got the prince's
change in here soon.
Okay, so looks like we gotta go, folks. I'll put it on, you know, the internet or something.
Julie Kent Official on Instagram.
Bam. Bye.